Welcome to the Advocacy Podcast, Journeys to Excellence. We speak with Queen's Counsel, trial lawyers and judges from around the world about how they excel in the courtroom. Please subscribe on your favourite podcast platform and visit us for additional resources at theadvocacypodcast.com.
I'm your host, Bibi Badejo. In this brief episode, we delve into the cornerstone of success, effective preparation. Join us as we hear from three titans of the English bar, Inessa Weeks KC, Professor Joe Delahunty KC, and Joe Sidhu KC, as they reveal their distinct approaches to ensure they're impeccably prepared every time they enter the courtroom. Obviously, all trial lawyers need to get to grips with the facts and the issues. It's obvious that you have to read the papers, so I'm not going to get into that. But what's your process for preparing your cases?
It's a really important question, but quite a long one. And I ought to begin by saying it depends upon what sort of case you have. Commercial litigation that is always, in my understanding, restricted to issues identified by your commercial judge. Family law is really quite different. There are many parties who are interested in what happens to a child and where that child goes. You have only a judge who is your fact finder and your legal entity. The criminal courts have jurors and judges. Employment law, which I practiced a lot when I started crime and employment, you have your panel of tribunals. So it depends upon the kind of case that you have. Let us give you an example of crime and the preparation of expert evidence. For example, I happen to be working on that and I've got a conference later today with an expert. Case analysis and case theory is your idea of what is effective preparation. Everybody prepares. There isn't a barrister in this country who doesn't prepare their cases. But I have learnt that there is a distinction between what is effective prep and what is just prep that gets you by. Effective preparation is a set of actions that you do. You write, you research, you go see, you talk to your client, you think. That's all to do with preparation. But the preparation must be guided by issues in a case, and every case has issues. There are things you will agree, so there's no issue. There are things that you fight to the death, and that is an issue. And the preparation is designed to ensure that you can win. I don't think it's sensible now with my seniority to say that you must win, because we just don't win everything. But in the route to trying to win, you must be the best that you can be. And that's what the client requires, and that's what the client is entitled to. So it is an effective method. I can give you some tips if we're going to go down that route, but that's what I call preparation.
It's great that you've made a distinction between effective preparation and preparation that gets you by. Looking at effective preparation, do you use tools? Well, I'm assuming you use tools because I know how prepared you get for your cases. So things like chronologies, are there other schedules that you use in particular? What sorts of things do you have in your arsenal to make sure that you're as prepared as possible?
Well, for our young audience, if there are any listening, then chronologies and schedules are a must, and everyone gets used to that immediately. But it is still worth touching on them now, because as the more senior you get, the more you rely upon them. It sounds a very trite thing to say, but it is helpful to understand why we do the prep we do, and not to mimic somebody else doing it, but to understand how it affects your approach. Chronologies, schedules, imprint the case within your mind. They make you remember it, and they do this, which is something we all forget. When you draft a schedule which contains a list of dates and a list of things that occurred, you suddenly realize there's a gap. The gap in that schedule makes you question. Suddenly, you have a point you never saw before. So that is why you do the fairly, what I call mandatory, sometimes a little bit boring prep, but it is exciting because you then sit back and you suddenly have a picture of the case you didn't have before. And then you sit back and you think to yourself, what have I now got? I've got something which is slightly different. And actually, my client didn't tell me this point. So you go back and you take some further instructions. So chronology, schedules, however you do them. I draw pictures. I often draw diagrams. I put people in places on this piece of diagram. And then I move them according to what they say. And suddenly the picture becomes alive. So whatever it is that you do to prepare. Schedules are really important for judges, but you have to agree them. Even if they're not agreed by the other side, just put on the top of it, not yet agreed. Because the judge may find your schedule really important. And anyway, we all need brownie points from judges. So score them when you can.
That's an excellent point. I love the fact that you use diagrams and bring your case to life. Do you use any particular apps or devices for that, or do you freehand and it's a pen and paper?
I think I freehand because to begin with, it's mostly about that. But if you have a case that involves money, and some of my fraud cases do, and you're dealing with a proceeds of crime civil application following on from a criminal trial, I think it's helpful to go to one of your computer geeks and get an app and get some device that makes it a little bit more simple and makes the movement of events and money easier, because we're in a world of technology, so there are sometimes I will use that. But in the human factor cases, where it's one person saying they did X, and our cases are always about the mind of human beings. And the preparation is getting behind the mind of the witness you're about to cross-examine. Pretend that you are that witness. And try to understand, within the context of the circumstances of your case, why did the witness say what he did? It often also gives you a completely different perspective, and it gives you a little bit of guidance of how you want to then cross-examine that witness.
I'm a prep queen. I don't think you win cases by winging them. You've got to read the papers, and I don't mean reading the papers at the bare minimum. You've got to read the papers that the other side don't read. So you learn from the beginning what the structure of the case is about, and you reconstruct it in the way that most suits you. I never take a narrative from anyone else. It's my job to create the narrative. So I think it was through reading the papers and understanding how selective, for example, a local authority case was when there was more material there. That's what taught me that there's no shortcut for prep. And then having done the prep, there is no way that you can win a case for a client unless you've got a clear strategic plan and you know how to create it both outside court and inside court. So when I prep cases, when I'm given a brief, I don't read the material that I think the judges are going to read first. So I don't read the Guardian's report. I don't read the expert's report first. I read the material I think should inform those reports so that I'm not influenced by them. And then I cross and compare to identify what parts are relevant that I can then pick up. If I then read the expert's reports, I read the expert's reports, and the experts in my cases, as you'll know, because I deal with not just sex abuse cases or ISIS cases or ritualized abuse, not that type of thing, which is more fact specific, but I deal with a lot of child injuries, fatal cases. So in any case, I'll have to understand how a baby has got to be transformed from a living, breathing, soft, warm entity to be a collection of blood and bones on slides after a post-mortem. And I'm saying that really brutally because that's the process you have to undergo in order to try to recreate that child's dying moments or dying days. So that means in our cases, we'll cross-examine any number of ists. We'll cross-examine pathologists, you know, neonatologists. We'll cross-examine those who examine eyes, those who examine bones, those who examine, you know, and try to understand the neuropathy of the brain. And the only way you're going to try to understand their world is by not being frightened of the material they're looking at. So you have to read the medical records. You have to know what happens with the SATS report, the SATS levels, the oxygen levels. You've got to look to see how the nurses' notes feed in with the doctor's turns, because you can win cases by picking up on things on timing. There's no point having an eye exam of a baby long after they've been in hospital and have fits, for example, because then the examination of the eye is affected by the intervening events. So you're looking for significant intervening events. And the only way you can do that is if you're not frightened of the raw data, which is hard to grapple with because it's hieroglyphics. But that's the way you break the fear barrier, and that's the way you can make a connection between what you're going to have to cross-examine on and how you're going to chisel out that piece of information that everyone has either not spotted or not seen the significance of or hasn't put in context. So for me, preparation is, first of all, I do the index, right? I've got an easy way. So cases are so huge. Normally my cases involve thousands and thousands of pages, and that's quite intimidating. And we never say that, but it's true. So the one of the ways in which I do it is I get the index out and I just flag up. I just go through marking up the papers. So the statements and then the experts' reports and then the documents. And somehow that means I break down these thousands of pages into something which are now almost like a novel to me, because I can see where the chapters are. And then I start reading the chapters. But that very first stage of doing the index flagging is my way of, oh, it's not work. You know, it's not really that bad. It's just a little bit of filing. But in fact, that's my way into the case. Then I go into the deep stuff. Then I go into the medical records, because that's my next fear barrier, because I know that's going to be a hard slog. So you may as well tackle that first.
We start with the first rule, that you must, if you fail to prepare, prepare to fail. So it's an old adage that you must ensure that you've done your homework before you ever step foot into a courtroom. And why that is important is this. Most advocates learning their craft often get upset by the fact that their nerves get the better of them. They may come into court with an approach that they want to put across to a judge, and then they stand up, their mouth goes dry, their hands get clammy, their breathing goes all over the place, and that brilliant performance that they expected to deliver ends up disintegrating. So the first thing is this, you must make sure that you're prepared, because if you're prepared and then you step into a courtroom, one of the potential disasters that is waiting to befall you is removed. That is, that you've arrived and you're not prepared. Because if you're not prepared and then you get struck by nerves, it's a double whammy. The second thing is this, is that if you are prepared, you have removed one of the key potential distractions, which is, where's that paper? Where's that document? Where's that fact? Where's that thing that I needed to mention at this particular juncture in my advocacy performance? But because you're prepared and your file is ready and it's all in front of you, you shouldn't have that problem. So when you're getting ready, actually, you should have all of that sorted out backstage. You then concentrate on your performance.
Jo, what I was wondering about was if you have a particular process to the way that you approach your cases when you get them.
I do. And it's been, Bibi, the same process I've adopted for about 25 years. It's really basic and it's really simple and it really works. And it goes like this. So what I tend to do is, whether the case papers, that's the witness statements, the documentary exhibits, etc., are in fact uploaded to the digital case system, or whether I am actually given hard copies, all of my papers end up in a lever arch file or two or three. My objective is always to slim down the papers that I really need into not a lever arch file, but a slim file. So it becomes extremely important to me to do the sifting exercise, the filtering exercise, so that I can focus on what really matters. So stage one for me is, get all my papers together and order them. I have a particular approach, a formulaic approach. I like to use tabs in my file. My first tab in my file is invariably the case summary. That's prepared by the prosecution. The next tab will be the indictment. The next tab will be the list of witnesses. The fourth tab will be the actual witness statements that I'm going to need for the trial. In other words, the witnesses who I'm going to be cross-examining. The next tab will be my list of exhibits. The tab after that will be the actual exhibits, the documentary exhibits, which are going to be important for me to have to hand in the trial. And then after that, I've got a tab for what we call unused material. Then I've got a tab for my client's instructions in a proof of evidence. I will have a tab for the defense statement. And finally, I will have a tab for correspondence. And all of that gets pared down to a file that ultimately is a slim file that I can walk around with. It's my walk around file. And this is really important because if I tell you what my style of advocacy really boils down to, it's this. It's about minimizing the material which you've got to only those essential papers that are going to be used and deployed in the context of the trial. And the rationale behind that, BB, is to remove all extraneous matter which can distract you. And I'll come on to this in a minute when I talk about how I prepare my cross-examinations when we get to that. But for the first stage, it's this. Think of an advocate as essentially an accountant. An accountant crunches numbers. An advocate crunches facts. So when I teach case analysis to young barristers and we talk about how you dissemble the information which you've got, I will say to them, you've got the relevant law, which you must make sure you're on top of. That's to do with the statute and the authorities which are relevant, and including criminal procedure rules or civil procedure rules. Then you've got the actual material in your case to do with the facts. That's the witness statements, the exhibits, etc. And what you're looking to do is to condense that information, crunch it down, a bit like an accountant does, so that you only have the bare essentials. The first stage is organize your material in a way that works for you. And I'll mention one other thing about this as well, Bibi, and it all sounds very, you may think, my goodness, this sounds like he's preparing for his GCSEs or his A-levels. You know, has he really been doing this all his career and managing to get by? The answer is yes. And I'm going to tell you what I do. I use highlighters like they're going out of business, right? For me, highlighters are an absolute godsend, because when you talk about preparing for your case, identifying what really matters is crucial when I talk about crunching facts. So let me tell you what my little system is. I use a pink highlighter for dates and times. I use a green highlighter for locations. I use a blue highlighter for any exhibits that are mentioned in a witness statement or on an exhibited document. I use an orange highlighter for anything that relates to my own client and only my own client. So, for example, if it's a murder case where I've got there's 3, 4, 5 defendants and I'm representing one of them, my client will get an orange. That's what he gets because that's about him, because it helps me to focus on what that witness is saying about him. And then I'll use a yellow highlighter for just, you know, contextual things. And what that means is this. When I stand up and I have a witness statement in front of me and I've highlighted it in the first tranche of work that I've done in preparing the case, I've already done that highlighting thing where I've seen what really matters, dates, locations, and all of that. My eyes don't dance around the page. I don't confuse myself and start thinking, oh my God, where is it? I know it's there somewhere. Was it on the second page? Was it on the third paragraph? Where is it? I don't need to worry about that because I've highlighted it and I know exactly where to find it.
Do you want to become a better advocate, but you don't have the time to attend long in-person training courses? If so, the Advocacy Coach Members Club is the perfect solution for you. Our members-only club gives you access to concise, advanced advocacy courses that you can learn at your own pace on your own time. You'll also get exclusive access to replays of the Advocacy Clinic, our online platform for lawyers to practice their advocacy skills, and a private members-only podcast. In addition, you'll become part of a community of like-minded lawyers who are all committed to becoming better advocates. You'll have the opportunity to network with other members, share ideas, and get feedback on your work. Join the Advocacy Coach Members Club today and start becoming a better advocate on your own time. To find out more and join, go to theadvocacycoach.com/members club. Become unstoppable at court with the Advocacy Coach, your partner in your journey to advocacy excellence.
Thank you for listening to the Advocacy Podcast, Journeys to Excellence. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe and visit us at theadvocacypodcast.com for reading lists and other resources. Until next time.